Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're talking Goss's bacterial wilt and blight. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at the Ag Wagon. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about spelt. Cool Beans, that's Corny. We'll have some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Feel Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilties out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. Well, despite some incremental temperature changes, it's still pretty darn warm out there.
71 degrees currently.
Doesn't this feel like we had August weather in September and October is very September-like? It's been kind of, it's perfect for what we needed in a way, but right. I mean, crops are also getting dry and there's issues. I'm not saying there's not, but if it would have been cooler than normal and still wet, that would have been a lot worse. Yeah. So
beans are flying.
Beans are crazy flying off, and like how dry they are. Like I've heard anybody say like a 13. Really, it's all like 12s or 11s.
Just got off the phone with the grower. He said the stems were still green.
Yeah,
and it was 10% beans, 9% beans.
Yeah. Wow,
with green stems.
Green stem.
Yeah.
No, I even heard of some growers like only combining at certain times in the morning and then quitting by, we're like the opposite schedule of beans almost, so that they'd be maybe a little bit more, just a little wetter and just a little different. But
how many times even just the cloudy day like throw off your
right
every your beans, whole schedule yeah. for beans? And we haven't had a cloudy day. I mean, we've had some slight overcastness in the morning maybe once in a while,
but still can't believe the hurricane didn't give us at least clouds.
Right.
Like, it didn't give us any rain or anything, but we didn't even get, like, a change in anything. It just, this high pressure is just dominating right now. And it's nice for a few days yet. Like,
right.
The 10-day, there's no real rain chances. It's like 5% every day.
I was running some GDUs to try, like, I'm getting the big question of, like, is my corn going to make it? That's been the whole time of September, really. And it was really
September
hard.
September 1st, it was like,
right,
nah.
Right, exactly.
But now it's like
when you did the projection September 1st, it was like, God, there's a chance. Like, I'm saying there's a chance. And now when we get hit to October 1st, I'm like, holy man. Like, some of those changes, I had one that was going to black layer November 2nd. And I'm like, that's probably not going to make it.
No.
You rerun that same thing today, it says October 12th.
Wow.
So we made up like two and a half weeks, 3 weeks.
And I just saw a thing from Sampy out of,
oh, yeah, Luke Sampy, Channel 5.
Yeah.
We are Green Bay.
18th is our next chance of frost.
So 18th?
18th okay. of so, October. So that could make this work. You know, you start looking and then you go like, holy man, this could make, like, now there's more than a chance. So it's, and even that, some of these farms luckily have they will use it for high moisture corn to feed cattle, if worst case. So it was like,
yeah.
If that's worst case, I'm a lot more comfortable than drying down stuff that's, you know, 28%. That isn't going to work.
Yeah, we got a 3-day, like, I'm going to call it a cold snap. It's not a cold snap. But where it's under 70 consistently during the day and only 39 at night. Like, that was, because I was watching that, it was like 37, I think, earlier in the week. It was like, ooh, are we going to get, like, not it would be a killing frost, but are we going to start
close.
Right,
getting where you get close to frost. But then after that, it's like 42 at night, 48. Almost 80 again next Friday.
There's one day that was going to hit 80 again. Yeah. Close to 80 again.
So, there is no, the end is not in sight here.
I expected one of my JV football game watchings to be like frozen.
Sure, most of those, yeah.
Did you like, but
well, so as you think of like, yeah, the Friday night lights.
Yeah.
You have a night light on Friday?
On Friday.
Only Fridays?
Because
I was going to tell Bill to let it go.
They usually, those are like freezing. Yeah. There's like one where it rains and it's just gross. And yeah, I really haven't had.
And the rain's not actually freezing, but it feels like it's freezing.
Yeah, right. Correct.
Yep. Last year we ended in Luxembourg and I thought I was going to just freeze. Like,
you might be in shorts.
Yeah. Like this year it has not. It's been great. That season's only a week over. Like, my son plays Monday, and then a week from Monday, and they're done. So that's
Yeah, you definitely might be in shorts then, right? For the last
I think game. Varsity goes like the state, we go three more, like the varsity programs go 3 more weeks. They have 3 more games, I think, than did, playoffs. But
did they start at the same time as varsity football too? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So that
they don't play as many.
Yeah. But still they're starting in like mid August or whatever. So
yeah. Yeah, maybe a week later, I forget, but
sure.
Still it I just assumed by the time we got to now I would need more than a sweatshirt, and it's you take a light coat because it's later at night, you know, it's 5-6 and it's chilly, but it's not frozen.
Is it your perfect day, Bill? Like April 24th?
Yes.
Not too hot, not too cold, just need a light jacket.
It's just right.
So yeah, I mean, we got that going for us, I guess. It is, I mean, kind of what makes me wonder what Halloween's going to be like this year. Like, it's going to be one of those years where the kids are sweating.
It's definitely
going to
snow somehow. Yeah. It's going to snow. Yeah.
Well, it did last year.
Right.
Last year, true. We had like ice storms and stuff. People, they were canceling trick-or-treating in some towns because of how bad the weather was. So I feel like this year might be the opposite of where, like, kids are sweating in their thick costumes because normally on Halloween, you're wearing a jacket underneath your costume just to stay warm. But anyway, you guys ready to get into our topic for today?
Yep.
That didn't seem very... just
well, no one gets excited about Gauss's wilt.
No, Gauss's wilt is not... Bacterial diseases are not... that's a good way to put it. Even the disease guys don't seem to get... You know, like tar spot, that gets most of the pub. Northern corn leaf blight, that's just an old player that's always been around.
It's a veteran.
And then you get some rust.
Everybody ignores rust because it's there.
Right. But then you get to Gauss's wilt, and that's just, whatever. No, let's talk Gauss's wilt. So basically...
After that rousing
intro,
I'm sure it was like, yes, please, more Gauss's wilt.
They just turned it off. Like, everybody just hit stop.
And mute.
Don't turn it off. I mean, Gauss's wilt still has some...
just fast forward to the egg history bit. It's fine.
It's one of those... It's one of those things that comes out of nowhere, and you go, wait, what? So I got a story later after we introduce it about like where this has come from, why we're talking about it. Because it's not one of our, you know, in the, like we said, there's other diseases that get first. Those are all fungal pathogens. This is a bacterial pathogen. So it's a lot different. So obviously there's good fungi, bad fungi. There's good bacteria, a lot of good bacteria. We need them in the soil. And then there's some bad bacteria, and this is one of them that gets tricky because one of the things that you might ask when you're out combining feels like, why didn't the fungicide I applied this year work? And one of the reasons could be that it's not a fungus out there, that you have Gauss's bacterial wilt and you have a bacterial problem. So this is something that it's still, I would say, I don't want to say rare is the right term. Bill, have you seen much or do you... What I do think is tricky about Gauss's is I do think it just gets grouped into other diseases because... So its symptoms kind of have like a... They do look a little bit like northern corn leaf blight in that it's a brown sort of lesion on the thing, but northern corn leaf blight gets real like cigar-shaped.
Yep.
So these are more look like, to me, it looks like nitrogen burn, but like it'd be later on a plant if it got nitrogen burn. And then it has, those lesions, but it also gets freckles, they call them, on it, which the freckles are tricky. So it'll get these black or like light brown or dark brown sort of freckles that look in a way potentially like tar spot. If you were to look, not all of them, like some of the pictures, you're like, well, no, that. I'm not going to fool that for tar spot, but some of my scene of it, you could say like, oh yeah, okay, I could see where that would be tricky because you have that going on. So the way it looks does look like other things where you might just say, you might just write it off that it's another disease altogether. The other hard part with diseases in general is most of the time you don't just get one, that they do like to come in pairs. So it is potential that you have this, but you have something, you know, have other ones out there.
Yeah, a lot of them have similar conditions that bring them on. So
right. So this year, why we got to watch it is it's primarily infects when leaves have been wounded, which we had some enough winds. So and when it says wounded, I mean hail especially. If you got hail, there's a really good chance you opened up a wound that could bring in Goss's will. But any wound, I mean, you could have nitrogen burn. You could have sprayer. Kind of a slant, you know, where it gets...
Sprayer.
Yeah, sandblasting. I've seen it in irrigation pivot, not the tracks where it runs it over, but the gearbox where it just mangles it all up and scars it. And then all of a sudden that has a spot where you get something, then it moves throughout the field. So it usually spreads from some sort of infection. And so it's not as typical that unless you have really, really poor disease resistance for it, it's not as typical. It just comes in, but that has to start it. But the other things, it does like the wet weather we've had, and then it does like warm weather, not hot, so not like 90 to 95 and not cool like less than 70, but like warm like 80. Which I think would describe this summer quite well. Like, like we haven't been, like we just said, we're kind of ahead on GDUs, but we weren't like maxing out a bunch of, we were maxing out right at the 86. We weren't hitting like.
We weren't maxing points. Out till September.
True. True. So it's different. But so it is something that comes in that way. And then most of the time you don't really see it till later in the year. So this is one where you can get it early. But typically the visual symptoms come on sort of later. So they're most visible and increase in severity after silking. So this is something that it is a more later, which a lot of our diseases, I would say, are that way. So it overwinters in basically in debris, like corn debris at the soil surface. So if you had it, you might have it again. And then the bacterial pathogen, which I just like the name of it because it was... Clavibacter michiganensis subspecies Nebraska. It doesn't say Nebraska, but it's Nebraska.
So it's Michigan and Nebraska, right, so we can blame for Goss's.
Right. Boo. It does kind of have those two in the name. And it was first observed in Nebraska in 1969.
Is it Michigan or just Michigan State? Like which one?
We'll blame Michigan.
All right.
I don't hate Michigan State.
Yep.
So it started in, first was observed in Nebraska, and then kind of through the 1980s and the early 2000s has kind of moved through the Midwest. And then it did make it up to two Canadian provinces as well. So I believe it was Manitoba.
Blame Canada.
Whatever was the other one next to it. No, it's
that blob next to Manitoba. Yeah. Alberta.
I believe it was Alberta. Thank you, Matt. It was not Saskatchewan.
Wasn't up in Saskatoon.
No, it was not. It was in Moose Jaw.
Moose Jaw. Oh, yeah, that's unfortunate.
I don't know if Regina has it, but maybe.
I think Regina is a big hot spot for bacterial disease.
You got to get that checked out.
Yeah, good antibacterial cream on that will clear lots of stuff up. They don't make a corn antibacterial cream.
So that is the problem, man.
Yeah.
So
yes, why don't we have this?
If you have... other bacterial infections, they make cream. Here we don't. There's
no logistics for a cream.
No.
Really?
Wow.
We haven't figured that one out.
No, like how big of a tube of cream would you need to go across the corner?
Just an airplane with little toothpaste tubes hanging out on the thing.
They make cream corn, but it's just not.
We don't cream the corn in the field, though. Yes. We cream it after it leaves the field.
This is going the wrong
way.
Yes.
Yes, we've digressed just a touch.
So basically, it's throughout the Midwest. What is interesting is basically only this is only a North America problem. So most other areas that grow corn really don't have it. So that's kind of an interesting fact about it, that it really hasn't been found like all over or anything like that. So one of the unique things about it is it can survive in other plant species, mainly grasses. So confirmed hosts. So these are just ones that are confirmed, that there isn't more, include grain sorghum, annual ryegrass, Sudan grass, several foxtail species, Johnson grass, large crabgrass, shattercane, blue big stem, big blue big stem, and little blue big stem.
Big and little.
And woolly cupgrass.
So not the extremely tiny blue stem or the gigantic.
Not medium blue stem. Either. Right. Just little
big
and
little.
Big.
Okay. Good to know. I like woolly cupgrass. Just the name. I don't like the actual thing itself.
No, woolly cupgrass is the worst.
Right, but I like the name. It's very, very specific. It's woolly cupgrass.
Woolly.
The and it basically says these and other grasses may be sources of inoculum to affect corn. So weed control is a big part.
Yep.
So if you've got a lot of grassy weeds, you know, they could be somewhat of a host, or that could be, you know, so you got weeds, you go to kill them and they don't die or whatever, that would open them wounds and it would come in there and that could infect your corn or however. But yes, it's mainly grass species.
Well, even,
and it's many of them can get it.
I mean, even if you're planting corn into like a hay field, a grassy hay field, you could have foxtail
or
other stuff out there. So there's potential other forage impacts that this could have.
So this one, like we said, there is no cream for it, unfortunately, or sprays. So how do we prevent it?
Oh, yeah. Tough Actin, Tenactin.
Tenactin would be good. Boom.
Oh.
Yeah.
R.I.P. John Madden. But yeah, boom. Get some Tough Actin, Tenactin. Well,
wouldn't Tenactin, though, be for fungal?
That's true, that is fungal.
That's more for fungal on your feet, I think.
I was thinking it was bacteria, but you're right, it's fungal. It's
not.
My bad. Sorry. Took us off track. Back on track now.
So the main thing, three things we got you can do is plant-resistant varieties, which is probably the number one, the easiest. This has become more common that it's more things that are resistant, more things to use. The second big thing is crop rotation. So basically, you'd want to shy away from grass species and plant broadleaf type species. So alfalfa, soybeans. A lot of the, when you're thinking about using a cover crop, you could also think about using more of a broadleaf species to not bridge it either.
But going corn after sorghum isn't an option then. Like, that's right. Not going to help your case.
Correct.
So that, it's just that happens in our world.
Yes. It's basically trying to get away from grasses in general.
The good news in our world is we're most likely chopping that sorghum. This is grain sorghum, so it's obviously then that's left in the residue after the combine.
Right.
Combines the grain, so that's a little different. But at the same point, could be a reason.
And then the other thing to use is tillage. So basically trying to bury the residue or like you said, Bill, remove the residue would be a good thing. So to get to the story, the main reason we're even talking about this was I got a call from a grower who last week, maybe even a couple weeks ago already, but it was kind of that mid-September time, and he had a field of Italian ryegrass that they were, he's a couple of them, that they were using, basically it was planted in the spring. And Italian ryegrass is also known kind of as annual ryegrass, but it's planted in the spring, and they were taking forage on it, and most of the time it was harvested and then wrapped in bales. And basically the first crop did okay, but all the rest of the crops just looked kind of meh. Like, they weren't terrible. There was a few bad spots. And from the road, it looked fine. But it was like once you got in it and looked close, then it looked worse, and it was just poor looking, poor yielding, and kind of like when you got to the base of the plant, it literally stunk, like it just had a smell.
Like necrotic, dying tissue?
And just like a, like, especially this particular farm was on that has very good, healthy soil, and it almost was like that dead soil smell and like a problem. So the grower sent some of the Italian ryegrass into the UW Plant Diagnostics Clinic, and Brian Huddleston there is kind of the head of the clinic, and basically he checked for many things. He did find, you know, some fungal pathogens and some other things, but he also did find that there was bacterial pathogens. So basically the test comes back and it does say, interestingly, you know, that basically, I just think that's an interesting word to put in a thing. Obviously, this is something out of the norm if you're going to put a word like that. But it says the bacterium that causes Goss's wilt was also positive. So that Michiganogensis, I said it different, the subspecies Nebraska kinesis.
Nebraskensis.
Thank you, Matt. That we typically see in corn and has been reported in Italian ryegrass as well, but it tested positive in this. So basically these plants were also suffering from Gauss's wilt. And then he gave this to some other guy to check other bacterial pathogens and also found some other bacteria, you know, some genetic material. So it was run on PCR, so which is like a genetic test.
Yep.
So kind of like when you had COVID and then they had to run the PCR test. So you had to run some grass PCR tests, and it did show other DNA material for other bacterial kind of wilts. So
you didn't want to try that one out?
No, I wasn't.
Xanthomonas translucens. Graminis?
Yeah, that sounds like a Marvel villain, isn't it?
Yes, I believe so.
Xanthomonas.
Xanthomonas. He's attacking his superpower, the city. Xantham? Yeah. I don't know.
Is that Professor X's real name? Yeah. Is actually Professor Xanthomonas.
I could actually answer that, but I'm not going to.
I think it's just Xavier. Xavier.
Yes, yeah, his last name.
Okay, yeah. I knew you would know that. I'm just
yeah.
No. Nerd.
Thanks, Bill.
Bill, did you know what Professor X did for?
No,
he didn't grow up watching X-Men. Clearly,
true,
like we did.
No,
true. We got to watch the cartoons. So yeah, that's our talk on Gauss. It's kind of a more unique, not a normal thing, but. Something as you're out harvesting to just not always blame on certain diseases.
I think it's good to know, too, not to just watch your corn, but watch if you're growing grass fields or something and watch those, too.
So is your grower going to plow this
right, so under? Already plowed it under, kind of immediately, actually, right. like received it's, this and was like,
lit it on fire stinks. And then...
No, right.
If it stinks, right, and it just was bad.
And then we discussed what's hard is, in general, his rotations, corn... and Italian ryegrass kind of a rotation. So a bit of a unique rotation, but he's going to have to go to soybeans.
Put something else,
And that was fine. He did grow some soybeans too at times. So it'll work. But that was as hard as like, well, how long? And was this just a freak thing because of all the moisture and what? So that was a hard one too to really know of how long do you rotate out and when do you know it's a problem. But
right.
At least... Now we know, too, on like this, again, if it happens in second cutting on any of his other Italian ryegrass, it just probably immediately work them under. And what's hard is at that timing, I don't know what you switch to for a crop necessarily. But, it's just a tricky thing because it's not like you can spray anything on it.
Clover?
So. Right, true.
Put some clover or something in. Yeah.
The other plan that he's...
It'd be whatever he did.
So one of his other plans is he's going to use more of like a diverse mix of... A forage mix, not just Italian rye.
So if the Italian rye, if it does go down, then you've got other things.
Do some
there.
Of these other things in there that
makes some sense. Add a little diversity. Yeah. Well, cool. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. Time to meet the Ag Wagon, the American truck built by farmers for farmers. A partnership between the Certified Agriculture Dealership Network and Fox Factory Performance Vehicles has spawned the first ever purpose-built farm truck. So we always called the truck you had on the farm truck, but this is the farm truck.
Not a beater, like.
Yes, true. Probably didn't run the hay rake into the side of it while you were trying to throw some garbage into the cab either, but. Shout out to John. But there are many distinct... I'm going to hear about that one. There are many distinct varieties of trucks, fire trucks, garbage trucks, tow trucks, cement trucks, for example. But oddly enough, there's never been a pickup truck 100% purposely built for farmers and ranchers until now. So Certified Agriculture Dealerships, or CAD, has teamed up with the Fox Factory Performance Vehicles to create Ag Wagon pickup truck aftermarket kits. The kits convert off-the-factory line trucks into rugged and tough, back 40 devouring, farm equipment hauling beasts. Before the Ag Wagon, most farmers upgraded and ruggedized trucks with cash out of pocket. That can get expensive. Original equipment manufacturers installed front ends, for example, are not built to withstand the pounding that driving fields and hauling equipment and other heavy loads every day places on a pickup. Many farmers end up replacing a farm truck's worn out front end and every other year or so, according to CAD report reps. So now farmers can finance and order a purposely built ag wagon through CAD's 200-plus dealer network. And it shows up ready to take an absolute pounding from day one, from the beefed-up front end to the ultra-heavy-duty back bumper. Several pre-configured options and features to choose from, starting at $30,000 for the basic tier of upgrades and topping out around $50,000 for the top-of-the-line package. Farmers can also order a la carte to pick and choose the features that best fit their intended use. They are agnostic, so it can be put on any type of truck.
Agnostic.
And assembled at, in the U.S. at Fox Factory's Trussville, Alabama plant. They were built off feedback from a panel of 14 farmers and ranchers. Features that made the final cut are mainly centered around making trucks more durable and rugged, as well as adding high performance and comfort features. Notably, there is an option to install a ruggedized Starlink internet terminal on the top of the cab for the on-the-go connectivity, and an integrated two-way radio system is also available. So it's kind of the pimp my truck for farmers right there.
Love it.
We could pimp the planter, now we can pimp the truck.
I do. The logo is cool. So it's got like a...
The ag wagon.
The
logo.
Lowercase A, which is looks like a backwards G, basically.
It does, yeah.
So they just, it's that's cool. That's cool about it. It's cool. I thought it was just on Fords because that's what a lot is pictured, but you can do it on...
On anything.
GMC, Chevy, or Ram trucks, too. So it is quite the...
Special financing available, and all ag wagons are a 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty. So, wonder if you can have to be new vehicle. Can you upgrade an existing vehicle?
It'd be fun to take in a beater truck and just get it made into.
Yeah, while you're at it, could you shore up the frame? Do a few, right. You know, pound the bed back,
new tires
to where it should be. It's always. How you know a truck has had a hard life is when you're watching it drive down the road and the bed's like kind of tilted one way or the other.
Right.
Like, ooh, yep, that did something it probably wasn't made to do. All right. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So today we're talking spelt, not to be confused with looking svelte, but spelt, which is also known as dinkle wheat or hulled wheat. It's a species of wheat. It is a relic crop eaten in Central Europe and Northern Spain. It's considered a health food since it's high in protein. Spelt was an imported staple food in parts of Europe from the Bronze Age to the Middle Ages. Spelt is sometimes considered a subspecies of the closely related species common wheat, in which case its botanical name is considered to be Triticum Aztivum, subspecies spelta. Spelt was introduced to the United States in the 1890s. In the 20th century, spelt was replaced by bread wheat almost in all areas where it was grown. At the beginning of the 21st century, spelt has made a common, become a common wheat substitute for artisanal loaves of breads, pastas, and flakes. I know the ancient grains thing is becoming more of a thing.
Is that really? Sure.
I don't know if you... I don't think
we're supposed
about
to
it.
Eat, like, in a diet of a human being, we're supposed to eat more.
Yeah, from, like, 1,000 years ago, sure. There was an article in one of these publications about a farm making their living on ancient, like, that was one of their diversification things, was growing ancient grains.
Ooh, Dr. Oz has a,
oof,
a ancient grain shopping guide.
Sure he
spelt
does.
Is the top one.
Cool.
Quinoa, millet, teff, sorghum.
Teff is a
Pharaoh.
Big one. That's
quinoa has been a very popular
quinoa
one.
Quinoa's been around for quite a while. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's ancient.
What?
Kamut? Ooh, here's one. Amaranth.
Yeah, amaranth. Actually, I think that the article I was referencing was amaranth.
Can we
of the
eat
things.
Water hemp? It's not could, necessarily
it,
ancient.
Technically, if you yeah. want to.
That could be a market. We could just let the water hemp take over the field.
I mean, some fields we
collect
do already.
The seeds. Yeah, there's some fields that are more water hemp than beans out there this year. But the ancient grain thing, that's a thing.
All right, thank you, Matt, and thank you to our listeners out there. Please to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's real easy. All you need to do is search Tilth Talk Radio and Apple Podcasts on your iPhone or on your Android phone. You need to download an app like Podcast Addict, and there you can also find us just by searching Tilth Talk Radio. You can also listen on your computer and smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcasts. You can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
Thanks, Todd. Now we'll move into our Cool Beans, That's Corny, and some current events. So, Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week, meat and corn export sales are up on the week this week. USDA is reporting a generally solid week for U.S. export sales. Corn, beef, pork, wheat, sorghum, cotton, rice, and new crop soybean oil sales for the week ending, so this is technically last week, ending September 26th. All saw week-to-week improvements thanks to better interest from some key customers. Yes, Todd?
Yep. No, the report was out this week from last week. Yeah. So, yeah, well, unfortunately,
it's still this week this week. Yes, so we probably won't have... next round of supply estimates are out, actually, October 11th. There you go. So not this, not the 4th here, but the 11th will be the next set of reports. So shipments of corn and wheat were more than what's needed to meet projections for current market year. 24-25 marketing year got underway June 1st for wheat, August 1st for cotton and rice, September 1st for corn, sorghum, and soybeans, while the 2023-2024 calendar kicked off on October 1st last year for soybean products. Marketing year for beef and pork is just the calendar year. It's always what gets confusing is like fiscal years and calendar
harvest
like,
years.
Right. There's so many different ways you can interpret it and schedules that people are on. That's why none of us are grain contractors, right? Because to keep track of all that stuff.
Nope.
But yeah, cool. Good to know. Exports are good. Makes us money. Now we'll talk our That's Corny this week, and it's really corny. Actually came close to someone that we all know, but thankfully they were able to escape unscathed. Hurricane Helene has caused billions in ag damage, billions in general damage. I mean, the roads, seeing pictures and stuff, the flooding and the road damage down there, just kind of crazy how much one storm managed to do, and fairly far inland, too. I mean, normally when we talk hurricanes, we're more thinking about coastal areas and damage that way, but this was...
Almost unfathomable knowing the damage that our little tornado happened at Tilth World headquarters a couple years ago, how much debris that threw. Imagine like just cities and whole areas.
And this too, you got just the flooding. You see anything about
literally
it.
Literally impassable.
That how many people are still missing and how much of a, Matt and Bill, all of us were on that call earlier this week with a bunch of Nebraska crop consultants.
North Carolina.
There was no Nebraska on it at all, was there?
No.
But North Carolina, and you could just see, and none of them were directly affected necessarily, but it was just...
But they knew people.
It was so close to home, and it just, you could just see the, they just looked like how we looked after that tornado, kind of, just kind of wore down, and how many are still without power, and just...
The amount of time it's going to take to fix. I mean, just looking at some of these pictures, you've got roads on mountainsides that have washed out. I mean, how do you even build that back up? I mean, do you have to dig through the mountain and make a new road? Like, there's a lot more questions than answers at this point when it comes to figuring out recovery and how they're going to rebuild. But so many different people and places affected in something that lasted, a day, not even really. I mean, it went through fairly quickly, but did a lot of damage in a short amount of time. But our Field Good Friday this week is a bright spot, and that is drone rescues, as farmers are helping find lean victims and deliver supplies. So drones in tow, farmers were among the first to respond to the victims of Hurricane Helene.
This is just so cool.
Yeah.
So cool that they would repurpose them and think to do that.
70 miles east of Asheville in Hickory, North Carolina, Russell Hedrick and his father cleared trees on their operation, working to open roads and access to their fields, compelled to do more beyond their land. They repurposed their agricultural drones for disaster relief. By September 30th, their team had mobilized. Hedrick loaded his drone trailer with pallets of water and food, headed towards Asheville to assist stranded individuals. His efforts quickly expanded to cover both the Asheville and Marion areas with supply drop-off points established in Marion. So using a DJI T-40, Hedrick delivered a chain of drone relief. Initially, he flew a DJI Mavic 3M drone at night to use thermal imagery to help pinpoint survivors for emergency services. Use of drone technology happened to be a game changer in this case, as Cody Jarvis, a friend of Hedrick, who joined the relief efforts, described. He said, "I got to experience a whole new level of helping others with the innovative technology of drones, drones flown by some of America's best farmers." And they weren't just any farmers. They came from North Carolina, Alabama, Florida, and Wisconsin, stepping away from their crops to offer assistance and equipment free of charge. Using thermal imaging, they located stranded individuals, delivered supplies to inaccessible areas, and helped family members reconnect with their loved ones. I was kind of on the same note, kind of cool. I saw a thing the other day, too, that a lot of private helicopters have been operating in the area, too.
Sure.
Delivering supplies and helping to find people.
I saw one. There was some stranded, I don't know how they had it, but they had a mirror, and they were flashing a mirror. And the helicopter could see.
Yeah. Sure, they caught the. Yeah. Yep.
That's how they got rescued, is by like flashing this mirror, and the helicopter could see them in the woods.
So, yeah, as of October 3rd, their team has transitioned from McDowell to Fairview in Buncombe County. Pushing into more desolate areas, they put out a call for side-by-sides to help navigate difficult terrain. Bottled water, canned food, baby formula, and diapers were among the most needed items. So, yeah, it's a lot of people going to need help for a long time in that area. So it's good to hear that folks are rallying around each other and helping out. So that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
This week we talked Goss's bacterial wilt and blight, not just for corn anymore. It can find its way into other grasses as well. In our spotlight, we took a look at the Ag Wagon upgrades that are available for your farm truck. Ag History Minute, we talked spelt. Cool Beans this week was meat and corn export sales up on the week. That's corny. Hurricane Helene doing billions of dollars in damage, not just to ag, but to every sector of that area. And our Field Good Friday was drone rescues and delivering supplies made possible by farmers and others who are willing to give their time and help their community out. So thanks for listening. And as always, happy farming.